the Biden administration announced yesterday that it will end the COVID-19 public health emergency on May 11th. Some Republicans are saying that an end to the public health emergency needs to happen now in an effort to save taxpayer dollars. The Biden administration disagrees, saying it's important for healthcare workers to have time to prepare for what will inevitably change COVID policies and reactions to this deadly virus. And we want to hear what you think at 1-800-642-1234. What about declaring an end to this public health emergency? Have your own reactions or opinions toward COVID changed since 2020, if at all? And if you're a healthcare worker, we'd love to hear your perspective this afternoon at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Jonathan Tempty is the Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Tempty, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thank you so much, Lee. It's a pleasure joining you this afternoon.
Yeah, the White House said yesterday that the end of the public health emergency coming up in May is a sign that federal officials believe the pandemic has moved on to a new, less dire phase. While the New York Times reports that more than 500 people a day in the U.S. are still dying from COVID-19. What does the end of the public health emergency mean in terms of public health?
Well, I think it's the realization that we have gotten through the worst of this, even though it's going to continue at a low level for quite some time. I think as of today, we've had about 1.1 million people in this country die of COVID, which is huge. That's basically one out of every 300 people in this country. On the other hand, we are seeing the signs of the transition from the pandemic to much more of an endemic situation where this virus becomes part of our annual list of characters that come and visit us, such as influenza and respiratory syncytial virus or RSV. So I think this is just an acknowledgement that we have gotten through the worst, but we still have some challenges ahead.
So if it will become more endemic like influenza, every fall I go to get my flu vaccine, how will this change COVID-19 vaccines without this public health emergency, Dr. Tempty?
Well, it shouldn't change things very much.
Okay.
As many of the listeners are aware, these vaccines came through initially with what we called an emergency use authorization, which allowed the FDA to approve the vaccines through an accelerated pathway. However, the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine have now been fully licensed, meaning they've gone through the full usual FDA review. And so along that line, it's not going to change things very much at all. The other thing to keep in mind is that the vaccines that we have all received or have been recommended to receive have been provided free of charge. They've been covered by the federal government. The transition that's going to occur is the vaccines will start being covered by private insurers, by medical assistants, and by Medicare. And so that change will be relatively invisible to consumers and regular people out there, and more noted by the insurance industry.
Yeah, Pfizer and Moderna say their vaccines will cost between $82 and $130, which is somewhere about three or four times, as I understand it, what the government paid. So this could impact those without insurance then, maybe the hardest?
That's correct. In this country, any vaccine that is recommended by the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices has to be covered by insurers without any deductible. However, if you're one of those individuals who is totally uninsured, there really isn't any way to pay for it except out of your own pocket.
Dr. Tempty, how will this change COVID testing with an end to the public health emergency on COVID coming up in May?
Well, I think the major thing we're going to see is the change from being able to request free home tests or to get a home test that is entirely covered by your insurance company to one that you might have to shell out some money for. There might be a copay, you might have to pay the entire cost. What we have actually seen across the country is a rapid decline in the use of the PCR or polymerase chain reaction tests to the home tests or the rapid tests. And the difference between those two is the home tests, we don't have any mechanism to require people to report the results. So ever since we've made this transition to more and more home tests, we've become a little bit more blind to how much COVID is actually out there. But again, what we're finding is people are less and less inclined to test. We're finding that in general, as people have been vaccinated and as people have had prior infections, the cases become more and more mild and less of the type that people want to know what that result is. So I think this is a reasonable time to make this transition.
Dr. Jonathan Tempty, our guest, Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And we invite you to this conversation at 1-800-642-1234. If you have some concerns about the end of this emergency declaration coming up in May, or if you're wondering why we haven't declared an end to this emergency already, 1-800-642-1234 if you're in the healthcare sector. Also like to get your perspective this afternoon, and you can also email us ideas@WPR.org. So Dr. Tempty, why not end this emergency declaration now? The Republican-controlled House is looking to pass the Pandemic is Over Act, which would end, in essence, this emergency as soon as it would become law. Is there a reason we wouldn't end it now as opposed to May?
Well, I think across the media, you've heard more and more about having an appropriate exit ramp. And I think the thing that we really have to keep into account are the other things with this pandemic that the money and the declaration of an emergency has allowed money to flow. So for example, when the declaration of the end of this occurs, we're going to see a number of people may be removed from medical assistance, people that might earn a little bit too much but have been kept on because of pandemic funding. For individuals out there with student loans, there have been some people who have had kind of a pause on the repayment schedule. I think really important for a state like Wisconsin is the public health emergency allows hospitals to collect some additional money for individuals on Medicare who have COVID. And this has allowed many of our rural hospitals to keep their doors open and keep patient care going. And so there are a lot of things that we need some time for transitioning. I think one other area that we've learned to do, I know that in our clinic we do much more than we ever have before, is the telemedicine visit. And there has been a relaxation of the rules for telemedicine visits during the pandemic. And we need time to kind of adjust and, you know, make new processes so this continues to work into the future.
Let's go to your questions now at 1-800-642-1234, where Kay is standing by. Kay, good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Jonathan Tempty.
Hi. I'm wondering if the role of pharmacists is going to change at all, because now they give a lot of immunizations, and I wondered if that's going to change.
Great question, Kay, and thank you. Dr. Tempty?
That is a wonderful question. And in fact, pharmacists are allowed to provide virtually any vaccine, especially to adults. And so I don't see any change coming, particularly with COVID vaccines or with other vaccines. And over the years, we have evolved in the medical community to more and more embrace our colleagues in pharmacy as being really, really important people in terms of helping to get that vaccine out there. We have pharmacies open at well beyond the hours of most of our clinics. They're oftentimes more accessible. So this is one of those good things that I think is going to continue.
Good to hear. And we're talking with Dr. John Tempty, the Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, with us to talk about the U.S. announcing the end of the COVID public health emergency, which will happen on May 11th. And you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. If you're in healthcare, what do you think of the end of the public health emergency? Would you like to see it sooner? Or would you like to see it extended? How are you planning on that changing your work or, for that matter, your personal life? 800-642-1234 or email us, ideas@WPR.org. Our conversation continues next on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're picking up our talk with Dr. John Tempty, the Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And we're looking at the announced end of the COVID-19 public health emergency, now set for May 11th. We invite you to join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you think it's time to end this public health emergency for COVID-19? And what questions do you have about what will change? You can always email us as well, ideas@WPR.org. And Dr. Tempty, I wanted to ask, this end of the public health emergency has been pushed back a few times. Is there any reason to believe it could be or could be delayed again?
This has been a virus that has been fairly unpredictable. However, if we look at the tea leaves out there, being a coronavirus, if we look at our other coronaviruses that we see commonly in Wisconsin, they mostly go away after April or May, and we don't see them again until fall. So my gut sense is that we're going to see low levels of this virus continue on, but perhaps we'll catch a bit of a break during the summertime. So I think, to be honest, in terms of the timing being on May 11th, that's probably an ideal time. And I think we just have to keep our eyes open, keep surveillance systems going, keep our vigilance up to see what happens with this virus. And hopefully we don't see the emergence of a much more harmful virus or a variant out there. But we will be smarter as time goes on.
Let's continue with your questions now at 1-800-642-1234. Jack in Milwaukee, you're on the air with Dr. John Tempty.
Yeah, do you see any funding problem potentially with for the local health departments to continue their programs related to immunization of the disabled and the frail elderly, or even those on hospice who may fall through the cracks here? As I understand it, in my own experience, we actually got an elderly parent immunized through staff through a private charity, even though she was on Medicare, on hospice. You have any comments on that?
Jack, I very much appreciate that perspective. And Dr. Tempty, what do we know?
Well, that's really such an important area, Jack. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, Wisconsin ranks either 48th or 49th. In terms of public health funding going out to the counties. And people across their 72 counties, our public health officers, are just devastated from the last 3 years. There has been incredible turnover in terms of personnel. There have been workforce problems, you name it. And so going forward, you're absolutely correct that we will be understaffed, underfunded, and the ability to be able to meet in the homes or in community centers for people who don't have access to care elsewhere. This is a problem that's going to continue as long as we underfund our public health infrastructure and, more importantly, our public health personnel.
Dr. Tempty, what would change with the end of this public health emergency when it comes to mask wearing or other COVID safety protocols? Would any of those change?
Not really. The masking has always been the purview of either a state or a county, or sometimes there is a mandate put on by a school district. We have never had a federal mask mandate except for public transportation. And so I think going forward, we're unlikely to see any of that. And in fact, the experience has been so negative that I think going forward, people are going to be very, very reluctant, even if there is a legitimate purpose, but very reluctant to bring back any mask mandates.
Let's continue with your questions now at 1-800-642-1234 for our guest, Dr. Jonathan Tempty. Chris in Elkhart Lake, good afternoon.
I was just wondering if once it's dropped down from the rate it's at, whether or not there's going to be mandatory injections or, you know, at works, schools, mostly workplace, that you have to actually be vaccinated to get keep your employment.
Yeah, I think going forward, Chris, that about the only place that you will likely see a mandate for becoming vaccinated for COVID is going to be within the medical profession, in healthcare settings for physicians, for physician assistants, nurse practitioners, for nurses, medical assistants, laboratorians. But outside of that, I really find that very unlikely. In fact, we really don't have any national or statewide mandates for any vaccine outside of K through 12 educational settings. Going forward, I don't suspect we're going to see that. On the flip side, I'm just going to put a plug in that we know without any doubt that the vaccines have been incredibly effective in terms of prevention of death, of hospitalization, and of even if you do come down with COVID, they're effective for preventing long COVID. So there's so many good reasons to get these safe and effective vaccines that I don't think there's going to be any need to mandate.
Thank you, Dr. Tempty. And I do want to follow up with that and ask if with the end of this public health emergency coming May 11th, if there would be any other changes for doctors or nurses or others in the healthcare field.
Well, I think for healthcare settings, the rules are usually evaluated and set up by administrators, by infection control experts, and so on. And you have to keep in mind that in a healthcare setting, we're really responsible to keep those individuals who are coming in to see us and who have underlying medical problems, immunosuppression, and so on. It is our duty to keep them as safe as possible. And if I can prevent one of my patients from becoming ill from influenza or from COVID because maybe I have an infection, that's what I need to do. I need to have that ethical standpoint of protecting those people who are putting themselves at risk by coming to our clinic.
Dr. Tempty, what about Medicare enrollment, which we've seen increase during the pandemic? What would happen at the end of this public health emergency to those who have enrolled in Medicare in the last couple of years?
Well, I think people who enroll in Medicare are enrolling in Medicare either because they hit the appropriate age or because they have an underlying disability. And I don't see that enrollment changing at all. I think where we do see things changing is within the state-run medical assistance program, or Medicaid. And some of the rules for coverage have been relaxed during the declared emergency, and that relaxation may go away for some individuals with the end of the public health emergency.
Do we have a number on that? Because Health and Human Services, this was last August, said up to 15 million could be dropped from Medicaid rolls.
Yeah, that's the number I've actually seen quite recently as well. So across the country, it could be quite a number of people losing that Medicaid benefit. and then having to go on to either the private market or one of the Affordable Care Act markets.
So, Dr. Temte, do we have any idea what the scope of this could mean for Wisconsin, or what Medicaid enrollment might look like in Wisconsin after the public health emergency sunsets?
Yeah, I have not seen Wisconsin-specific numbers at this point in time, so I can't comment.
And moving forward, how do you think COVID should be treated in regard to policy and public policy and overall approach here?
Well, I think this is a virus that, even going back almost 3 years ago, you know, 2.5 years ago, I told people that I respected influenza, a virus that I've studied most of my career, and COVID scares me. Mm. And I haven't changed very much on that. As of this past Friday, the CDC indicated that maybe 17,000 people had died this entire influenza season, and we're just about done with influenza now. So 17,000 across the country, and that compares to, you know, somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 people dying each week in the United States of COVID. And that has been going on since the beginning. And I think we're going to unfortunately continue to see hundreds of deaths on a daily basis across this country for at least the foreseeable future. So I think going forward, we still have to have a great deal of respect of COVID, with the knowledge that there are things that we can do to limit its danger.
Dr. Temte, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
And thank you so much for having me. Have a good day and keep healthy.
Dr. Jonathan Temte, Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, with us today to take a look at the end of the public health emergency for COVID-19 coming up May 11th.